Eileen McKernan.
Shin Card.
And I'm here in
Belturbet.
Yeah.
Belturbet.
Where do you live exactly?
I live 3 miles outside of Belturbet on the Cavan Fermanagh border.
And what's the name of the place?
Killaleigh, Cullenleigh, and I'm in the townland. I'm in the parish of Drumlane. I'm in the parish of Anna, and just across the bridge is the parish of Drumlane, and across it, a small lake to the front of the house is the parish of Galloon in County Fermanagh. So I'm at the corner of three parishes.
And right on the border.
Right on the border. I can hear the dogs barking from Anna.
What side do you see yourself on? I mean, are you mostly in the south or in the north? Or do you see a south and north?
Not really, because we know the people in Fermanagh, and it's very different now to what it was during the Troubles.
Yeah, of course, but in... you were born back in
1940.
Yeah. So, say, talk to me then about your background, your early days growing up there. What's your father do for a living?
My father was a farmer, and we had a farm just outside the town, and we delivered milk in the town, and we had to have the cows in early in the morning, and run with the milk and be in school for 20 past nine. However, we had to take our turns. I'm one of a family of 10, 4 boys and 6 girls. And in the evening, we had work to do as well, and we had chickens and the usual. And in the summertime, there was plenty of milk, and we churned butter. And any visitors to the house were given butter because we didn't have fridges.
I see. Yeah.
And I went to the Convent of Mercy school in town, and my mother was from the townland that I'm living in now, Killaleigh, and her grandfather and great-grandfather from the same townland. My father was from the townland opposite in Derryerry. And his people were in that townland for a couple of generations, and in Derrihoo for many generations. Mm. We have a very old graveyard in Clonossie, and there are headstones in it going back to the 1700s.
I see. And you were brought up then in the Catholic tradition?
Yes. And the rosary every night. And we lived at the edge of town, and when there was a bazaar or a carnival or a concert, people left their bicycles at the time, because there were very few cars, in the yard, and went off up the hill to the function. And there was a card game in our house every Sunday night for many years. 10 men played cards, and it started at 9 o'clock. Is this all right?
Oh, absolutely, yes.
It started at 9 o'clock, and at 10:30 there was tea that and my mother used to make a big corny cake after dinner on Sunday. Nobody was allowed to touch it, and this is what the men got for the tea at 9:30, and it finished at 12 o'clock. And when we got to Achille in the town hall, we were expected to be home very quickly after it, because my father would still be there and knew what time we come in at.
I see. What was your father's, what was your maiden name?
My maiden name was MacIlgon.
And
MacIlgona.
Okay, now that's, would you
it's a Cavan Fermanagh local name.
Yeah.
There was a poet many years ago, Cahbwee MacIlgon, and we believe it. He was Fermanagh, so it's. I don't know of MacIlgons in any other area that are not connected.
Your father farmed on the same land that your grandfather farmed on.
My grandfather had bought that farm. The home place was in Derryerry. This farm was in Creaney, just outside of town. And my grandfather, my father's father was John McElgone. And my mother's father was Farrell Grogan. And he was a cooper. And he made butter firkins for the butter market in Belturbet. There was a very, very large, thriving butter market in Belturbet at one time, and they came up from Fermanagh and to the butter market. A building on Castle Hill still that we call it the butter market. And I believe two uncles of my grandfather came from somewhere down the Midlands. They were Grogans. It's not a local name. And a Dixon's distillery was down at Erinvale along the river. And it employed over 100 people at one time, I believe, and they made whiskey, and the whiskey was exported, and it went. There were boats on the River Erne, and the whiskey was sent at the beginning down the river. Mm-hmm. In to Enniskillen, and from there was exported, and then later on, when they put a high tax on Irish whiskey and not on British or Scotch whiskey, and the bottom fell out of the Dixon's whiskey market.
I see. Yes, and that brought an end to that.
Yes,
and then your grandfather's business would have gone downhill. From making
yes,
the barrels.
Yes, yes.
Imagine. And so that kind of history. Did you know your grandparents?
I didn't know my mother's parents, but I knew my grandfather, John McElgone, and he was a great reader and a great storyteller. And my brother Farrell is he has great stories that he heard from. I mean, they told the story of a man called Joachim O'Leary, and locally he was known as it was something like Feckham O'Leary, but he was a priest hunter, and he used to get a bounty for a priest's head. This was at the time of the penal laws. And the news came that he was in the area. Seemingly the news used to come from one fair to another.
That's how it travelled.
And the story is that some of the locals dealt with him and buried him along Drumoy Loch, in a low grave along the loch, and when the flood came up, his body went away down Fermanagh, and they never knew where he was killed. And Farrell was in Dublin many years ago when he was at uni, and he made inquiries, and his professor of Irish told him he wasn't Feckham O'Leary, he was Joachim O'Leary.
and he got the name straight.
And Farrell has the year it happened in, and that, you know. There are many, many great stories about the area.
About the locality here, yeah. And then the tradition, all the customs and traditions. Would you have been brought up as a nationalist? Was your father very speaking the Irish language and the Gaelic and so on. Were you
I suspect my father was Fianna Fáil, but he didn't get... Oh, he always voted in that, but as children, if there was any adult conversation, we were told, run away out and play.
Hmm. You weren't privy to any of that conversation.
No. But my mother told stories during... my mother was born in 1900. My father was born in 1891. And in the period 1916 to 1922, my mother told us a story of out in Killilea, where I live, there was Matt Fitch. He was killed at the station at Clonus, and he's buried in Drumalee. He was an IRA, and it was during the... it would have been during the Civil War, and there was a barn up at the back of the land, and they used to bring food up to Matt Fitch and others who were on the run and used to stay overnight, and they had to carry it in a bucket so that locals wouldn't suspect.
They pretended
they were going to feed hens or whatever.
So your ancestral, your home was or the area was a safe place, was it?
Yes, it was.
And
and it's just on the border. There was quite a lot of smuggling in that.
And I'm sure your father did a lot of cattle smuggling to himself.
Well, I don't know. Our land was just at the edge of town. When he was young, an older brother, Farrell, he taught history in Carrick and Shannon for 40 plus years, and you need to talk to him.
Why? He was into it.
He would remember accurately, and he used to kill you with grandfather, and he always had an interest and listened.
Did the people in the border counties along the way, like you did, I mean, did you... some kind of substance, money, would come to you because of the good fortune of living in that particular area. Do you know, you benefited from both sides, really.
Well, I don't remember that, you see. I mostly remember... I remember people coming up from Fermanagh to concerts and that, and to bazaars in town. And... I had an aunt who lived on the border, just at Wattle Bridge. They had a shop, and we used to go there on holidays. And I wouldn't have heard a lot about the smuggling. Now, if I would find out for you. Farrell would remember. But yeah. I do know that there's a... just below where I live, between two lakes... when the water level is low, there's actually a causeway, and it was used for smuggling between Cavan and Fermanagh. And depending on which side, the price of the pigs was higher. And I remember eggs being smuggled.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I remember I had an aunt lived... just at the border, and when we were out in the summer, we used to carry these baskets of eggs over what we called the black stick over into Fermanagh, and they were sold in...
The price was
better in Fermanagh
isn't
then.
Isn't that fascinating? And in your mind then, did you see the border as a physical border where, you know, when you were over there, you were in a different place, and when you were back here, you were back home again?
Because we had relatives on both sides, I don't remember thinking about it as a border.
That's interesting. Yeah. There was no, in your eyes, there was really no border there, only that you made an extra bit of money if you were able to get your eggs to the other side.
Yeah, but I didn't fully realise what we were doing until years afterwards. I mean, when I was being reared, you did what you were told and you didn't ask questions.
Okay.
Sit down and be quiet.
And when you were young, were you told not to go near the say the local Protestant community or
No. And we had my father and mother. My father lived in Derry, and they had a very good neighbours. Some of them are still there, and there were Church of Ireland, and there was a woman. She was married, but her maiden name was Minnie Richmond. And I thought it was Richman, but it was Richmond, M-O-N-D. And until my mother was old, she used to, when she was married in Fermanagh, but she used to come and visit my mother.
Yeah.
And my father would have had, we had, one of the men that came to play cards on a Sunday night was Church of Ireland.
Oh, was he?
Yes.
Yeah. So there was no bigotry or no...
Well, I didn't notice it at the time.
So the Catholics, Protestants didn't matter, did it not?
Well, in our family, I'm trying to think now, but... No.
Yeah. And, okay, now, leading up to the 1960s, and even before it, in the 50s, trouble was brewing.
Yes.
And were people, what did you notice, your area, for example, the bridge going across into the north, was there gun smuggling and bomb smuggling, and was it a passageway for the IRA?
I lived in town for 65 years.
Town being?
Belturbet.
Here.
And when I retired, I moved out to Killaloe. We had a wee bit of land and we had an old mobile home when the children were young. And that's the townland my mother was from. And we built a house and I moved out when I retired. So that's, prior to that, I lived in town.
Okay, and you wouldn't have seen much of what was happening down
on the border.
On the border. No.
No.
And but hearsay, so did you know of movement IRA material coming across, or
no, there would have been no discussion like that while we were young. When we were young, you know, that anything like that, we were chased out.
Imagine. Okay, and so you went on. Did you? Were you teaching?
Or no. I was manager of the local social welfare office.
Yeah.
In town.
In
Belturbet. In
here.
Main Street, Belturbet. And I was married to Paddy McCairn, and his father's people were from Armagh and his mother's people were from Linanna, Fros Inver in County Leitrim.
Very Northern Ireland.
Yes. Yes.
And your husband is no longer with you now.
No, Paddy's dead 18 years now.
And so the two of you, when you got married, you were living and working in
Belturbet.
And you must have experienced the bomb in Belturbet.
Oh, I was there the night of the bomb.
Can you talk about that?
I was coming back from visiting my mother, and it was 28 minutes past 10 on the 28th of December 1972. And I was actually on the street up from where I lived. I lived at the bottom of Main Street. And I was in the middle of it. And every window at the front of the house was blown in, all the glass was broken, and the roof was damaged at the back. Part of the axle of one of the cars hit the back of the roof and ricocheted and went in and broke the back door in our neighbour's house next, Cunningham's.
So it was a big bomb.
Yes.
And was there many casualties?
There were two. A young boy and a young local girl. A young man from, I think it was Clonakilty, and he was in the phone box phoning home, telling the parents that he wouldn't be home that night.
And why was there ever any explanation as to why that bomb was set off in Belturbet here?
I couldn't tell you that, but there's so much talk that is not accurate. But nobody was ever sentenced or that I know of.
What were they trying to do?
Well, now, obviously, they were trying to do a lot of damage and they weren't worried about killing people either. It was just outside the post office.
Who planted the bomb?
It was believed it was somebody from Fermanagh that had come up from Fermanagh.
All right. And it was in some way some kind of a reprisal or some kind of a...
Well, you would need to do research on...
But you weren't even thinking about that at the time.
No.
You were just thinking about the horrible damage that it did. And the debt, of course, the people, the young people that were killed.
That night there was no electricity and it was like something you'd see in a black and white film. And we had 5 children at the time, and Kevin was only an infant. And we for a month afterwards we slept in the living room. Because our bedroom, all the front windows had been broken and they were boarded up and we couldn't have them repaired until the inspector came from the insurance company to ascertain the damage. And we put 4 of the children in the one bedroom at the back. And the following day, Paddy went up to Cavan and he bought a pull-out couch and we slept on that in the living room until, I think, about 3 weeks. And it was very difficult. I don't know how we got through it as well as we did.
I know, you just reliving those days.
Yes, every house on the main street was damaged. Officially, it's still Butler Street, because Stephen Butler, Belturbet was planted in 1610, and Stephen Butler came then. But we just survived. We had the office open the following day and we... four or five years ago, I was going to Bridge one night and up at the Seven Horseshoes, the hotel up the street. This man said goodnight to me and I said goodnight. And the next thing he called after me and he says, "Come back here, are you Mrs. McKernan?" And I said, "I am, yes." And he said, "God, you're a great woman." And I'd anyway, he was a guard and he had been on duty in Belturbet the night of the bomb.
Yeah.
And at 4:30 or 5 o'clock in the morning, they were up, still on duty. And he said they were cold and hungry. And 2 guards came and said, "Go down to McKernan's, they're making tea." And he said they came down and they got tea and sandwiches. And he said he would not forget it till the day he died. And it was lovely of him to go to the bother of saying thanks.
Okay, so I would assume then that what you're saying is that the community kind of came together afterwards to support one another, or even at that time.
Yes,
In the height of disaster, that people were coming together.
Yes, yes, yes. And Harry Smith, who was Church of Ireland, lived on Main Street, and nobody could have done more to help out that night.
Yeah. And did you, I mean, having a young family, that obviously scared the you and your family and your husband. Did that leave a lasting tension in the area and in which yourselves?
Yes, but we were young and healthy, and I remember we used the back gate for a long time afterwards for the children running in and out, because there was a side entrance going down Water Lane, and we were extra careful and that, but I don't know, we were always very busy and we just kept going. Yeah. And Nahalane Bridge was blown up afterwards, and I don't know. I don't honestly know now. And it was prior to the trouble, if there was anything needed, it was either Dublin, you had to travel to either Dublin or Enniskillen for. It was Enniskillen because down the road. And if you were doing repairs to the house or anything, Enniskillen was always an excellent town for shopping. And that all stopped.
It stopped then?
Yes.
After the bomb?
Yes, yes. We didn't have any comfort going, even though later when there was customs on the border and guard the patrols and that, but you could be unlucky when you get as far as Enniskillen, and you could be pulled in and left along the road when they'd see a cabin registration. And
that came against you.
Yes, yes. But we survived, we survived.
Yeah. And it made you, when you looked at the 26 counties, the counties south, say, and living a very normal, peaceful life, and then just not too far away yourselves, and you were going through this war-like zone, if you like.
Yes.
Did you ever think of, you know, this place is too dangerous for me and my family, I'm going to move down south? Did that ever enter your head?
No, but we were down south. We were in the...
I know you are, yeah, but you're right on the border there.
Yes, yes. Yeah. But you see, Paddy worked for Cavan County Council and I worked in the office, and we had no other way of... We didn't have a choice.
Yeah.
Because we had a young family, we had a mortgage and we had to earn a living. And
yeah, and you had to just get
just
on.
Get through each day.
Yeah. And in the years that followed, you stayed with your job there, did you?
Yes,
a social welfare. And you were meeting people every day, coming
yes,
and going.
Yes, yes.
And did you find that they were affected by all of this? Or what kind of people were they that came in and out to you every day?
Oh, they were We very, very seldom had any trouble from any of them. There were many of them are neighbours, and they were local, and we had people from West Cavan, and we had people coming back from England and what have you. And looking back, it's difficult to understand how we got through it as well as we did.
Okay, it was day to day.
Yes, yes.
And was it as bad as it looked in television? Of course, it was censored down south, but you would have seen it on the BBC every night. Bombs going off,
yes,
in towns, mm-hmm, and people being, mm-hmm, killed. And,
mm-hmm,
and did that just become the norm?
It must have done. It must have done. See, I was so involved with work and a young family, and I was busy all day and every day, and I didn't have time to sit and worry or think. Now, that might seem strange, but that was actually...
Yeah. I know, yeah. You just tell me, where were you when the Enniskillen bomb went off?
I was at home.
And what happened when you heard the news?
Well, I actually had been in the shop with you know, that man, his daughter died.
Yeah.
But we, at that stage, we used to go to Enniskillen fairly regularly. We were taking one of the family down to the orthodontist.
Yeah.
And we noticed a big difference after that. There was more security in that after that bombing in the north.
Yeah. And were people, local people in Enniskillen now, I'm just thinking, were they kind of looking at the Southerners then, you coming in with your cabin registration, did they blame, was the blame put on Southerners?
I honestly don't know.
Yeah. It didn't affect you.
Looking back, I honestly don't know how we survived as well as we did.
Yeah.
But we just got through each day.
And what was your husband doing then? Do you mind me asking? What was your husband working at?
He worked for Cavan County Council and on rural improvement schemes. And he worked all over County Cavan.
He repaired a lot of the roads that were blown.
Well, he did. He did not main roads. No, he did rural improvement schemes.
Oh yes,
side roads, lanes. Yeah. We'd called them.
Yeah,
that's not. But
did he take any part in this at all? Like, in any way?
Do you mean did he become involved with
her? In some way?
No, no. No, and neither did none of my brothers did either,
Go on. What are you going to say?
You know, I honestly don't know.
Yeah.
How we survived as well as we did. Yeah, but, I've said that before.
Yes, you have. But when you were saying that, I mean.
None of my brothers or my family were involved with what they call the shinners.
Yes. But, okay, that's on that side. But did you feel that an interruption in your life, a way that, you know, here's something, you know, these people are, you could blame the IRA or you could blame the UDF or you could blame the Ulster Volunteers, you know, there's so many groups you could blame. Put the blame on anyone?
No. But you're reading Irish history, for heaven's sake, go back. There's not a century, but it was the same or far worse.
Yeah.
My husband's grandfather was from Ross Inver in County Leitrim, and he was a teacher. And is this all right?
Oh, keep going.
He was a teacher, and they lived in rural Leitrim, and most of them lived on small farms.
Yeah.
And many of them didn't attend school. This was national school in the good weather in the summer. And he had a scheme that when they came to school, many of them were still speaking Irish or broken English. And he had a scheme and he taught them how to write a short letter home and write the name and address of their parents, Mr. and Mrs. whatever, Sinver, County Leitrim, Ireland. Because he knew the vast majority of them would be emigrating to either England or America. And he lived to be an old man, and he retired in Bundoran. And he used to get a letter or letters or cards at Christmas from some of these people in America or England, and they'd say, "Thank you, Master." And Granny told us this. I was so proud when I was able to write my name, when the queuing up for the pay, many of them would sign by Mark. I remember people in the office signing by Mark.
Go away, yes.
I have to sign by Mark, and yeah, I have to write, witness yes. it, his Mark. And some of them... went on to further education and do very well. Some of them used to spend their Sundays writing letters home for others.
Yeah.
So I always thought he was brilliant too. Officially he shouldn't have been doing that. But when they were at school, he didn't teach them history or A, B or C until he taught them how to write their name and how to write a short letter home.
Isn't that interesting now? Because this was so badly needed, wasn't it?
This was roughly 1900.
Yeah.
1890s, 1910.
You got those stories came down through the family.
Yes,
today,
yes, yeah. yes, yes.
And so it was your grandfather who
no,
was...
No, my husband's grandfather. My husband's grandfather.
Whose name was?
Whose name was James Braden, B-R-E-D-I-N.
Yeah. Well, now, and of course, he did a great thing, really, didn't he?
Yes, in doing yes.
that. But the... Everything was, you talk about letters, even a simple thing like letters, and that was the only real form of communication in
yes.
in your time. Mm. That was even interrupted during the Troubles. You know, you couldn't expect a letter every day because the chance of a post office being blown up or the central
poster. I don't remember all that now.
Do you not?
No.
Yeah.
So I.
Maybe not. Maybe it didn't happen. I don't. I'm not too sure.
When we turn on the television for the news now, all we get is bad news, drama,
sensationalism.
And all the good people in the world. Most of them are never mentioned. We hear about the villains.
We do. Was there entertainment and ways of getting some kind of sanity into your lives at that time? I mean, did you do anything? Like, what was your pastimes? You know, did you go on holidays? Did you?
We always went to. Down to Rossinver and to Bundoran. But we couldn't go through the north. We had to go up across Glengevlin.
And why was that a problem?
Because of the troubles in the north.
Yeah.
It was easier. You could be unlucky and be left sitting at a checkpoint for...
Quite a long time.
Yes. So we used to go... over Swaldenbar direction, up over the land, down where the Shannon Pot is.
Yeah.
And we did. We.
I know.
But holidays then were not like holidays now. It was a question of keeping the bills paid and keeping the mortgage paid. And
yeah.
When they got older, bus fares and bus...
And rearing a family, yes. And, of course, you had to leave them out to go to a dance or to... So the dance halls, even, were they segregated?
They would have been. No, I don't remember that. Well, they would have been, yes. But See, I was young when I was married, and of course it affected me, but except for the bomb in Belturbet, it didn't really affect me or the family. It was a nuisance not being able to go down to Enniskillen as we had done. But we just got on with life.
Yeah. And would it come to talk about today, and we're talking about Brexit and the border and
nobody knows.
Nobody knows. But if you saw, say, a hard border, you know, a physical border, would that make things a lot difficult and hard for your life now?
It would make a big difference. Big difference, because the border is it's only about 2 miles down the road from where I live. And as the crow flies, it's only a mile. I have to go out and round. And Castle Sanderson is just down the road from where I live. And the main entrance to Castle Sanderson was from County Fermanagh.
Yeah.
And the entrance that's used now is from County Cavan. It's the main entrance now. And I wouldn't like to see a hard border again.
Of course, yeah.
No.
And the
and so much has changed for the better in Northern Ireland. The media, it's all sensationalism, and Gordon Wilson was that man's name.
It was his daughter who was killed.
Yes,
isn't
yes,
it?
Yes, yeah. Yes, yes. And
and you were in the you.
No, but I we had been in Enniskillen at the Orthodont just a couple of days before that, you know, and I know the place that the bomb or the atrocity happened. You know,
and did you know Gordon Wilson?
Yes, I would have been in the shop.
Yeah.
In Enniskillen, and his father was in a dramatic society in Manor Hamilton with Paddy's father all those years ago.
Go away. Yeah.
Yes. And they talked about it. I remember being in the shop one time with Paddy and that would have been 1920s.
Oh, no, not that far back.
Yes, yes, Gordon Wilson's father.
Oh, yes, as far back as 1920s?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, that's interesting. So the big change that took part in that time was what?
Was the hard border, the border that after the trouble started in the north, that there was British Army on the border and customs on either side.
And the presence of soldiers and
yes,
and that.
Yes, yes, and yes. And a local man told a story about down at Leggy Kelly, there was a pub on the southern side in County Cavan. It's still there, but it's not open now. And this man used to tell the story about coming up from Fermanagh one night, and there was a gate on the Fermanagh side, and there were four or five walking sticks hanging on the gate.
Yeah.
He couldn't understand this, and he went into Bertie Riley's pub, and he said, he inquired about this, and he was told that there were boyos from Fermanagh that were on some sort of a disability pension, and they hobbled up to the border on the sticks. And when they got as far as the border, they hung the sticks and went into Bertie's for the evening. How true that was, I don't know.
But you'd hear all these stories.
Yes. And of course there was smuggling and cattle and pigs. But you see, I was removed from all that, you know,
When you went and you built your, you know, you lived here, and then you said you built a mobile home.
No. We had, where I live now, it's in the townland my mother and grandfather and whatever were born in. And we had a wee bit of land, and when the children were...
What was
in that town's land? Killaleigh. And there's another Killaleigh down the north as well. But we had an old mobile home for our summer holidays, and we used to go out and stay in it. And then when I retired, I built a house where that old mobile home was.
Just looking
out onto Fermanagh.
Yeah. I know. And when was that built, that house?
2000.
In 2000, yeah. And a lovely place to live.
Yes. And very good neighbours and everything.
Eileen, listen, thank you very much. You're great.
Thank you very much. But if I had my homework done, I could have been accurate with dates and
no, not at all. Sure, I'd probably come back to you again and talk to you again. But Eileen McKernan, thank you very much.
You're very welcome to Fáilte Road.